Hi, I'm Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent of my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally,
and what it's actually like to parent as an SMC.
This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast.
Welcome to our Ask Me Anything episode. So this is our last episode of the season. We've gotten some really good questions from our listeners, and we wanted to address some of them today. So let's get into these questions. How did you go about telling your family your plans to become an SMC? So context for my life. So my parents are deceased, and I grew up with a slightly religious Christian foster mom who was in her 60s, and I'm a rules girl. So when I made the decision to become an SMC, it was a big step for me because I come from divorce where I was doing it almost the right way in a partnership, almost the right way that I was trained to believe was the right way in a partnership, two-parent household. That was the reality and it was right within my fingertips. And when I got divorced, all of that got shattered. So when I decided to become an SMC, it was a journey that I had to go through. So I didn't arrive at it lightly. Now, I mentioned the parental part because I had to only tell my siblings. And so there is not a mama, may I type of dynamic there. There is a, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. And that was pretty much how I approached it. Now, I got the typical, could you do this? Could you do that? Maybe you shouldn't have kids. And that's okay. And I really like what Hera said is once you make your decision, sit with it for a while because it's your decision. You could sit with it for a number of months or years. By the time you make the statement to your family, they are hearing it in the moment and they are reacting and responding in the moment to something you have had years to prepare your mind, your heart, and your life for. So you're going to get a varying degree of responses. So just be aware of that. Don't internalize any of the responses, though some might hurt in the moment. Give it time. But don't let that hold you back from pursuing the thing that you think is important, your important next step in this path. So for me, I didn't have the overhead, but I did have to take years to arrive and unlearn in my own head the right and standard way of becoming a mother.
Next question. Do you think there's a right age to become an SMC?
I'm not going to say that there's a right or a wrong age to become an SMC. I think that maturity will depend on the person, but I absolutely think that you have to be ready for this path. There are a lot of challenges in the path. You love your kids, but trying to figure out how to juggle the day-to-day life of an SMC requires knowing where to find resources, knowing how to build your village, having a lot of self-awareness because it's just you. And for some of us, too much of me can be too much for someone who is two or three or six. So you have there are traits that I think you want to have in place. I'm not going to say there's a dollar amount that you want to have or a particular level in your career. I say be strategic about how you're stacking your money because this path does require funds, whether it's for childcare, whether it's for building out a nursery, whether it's for moving. And I would say, take a look at your career. If you have time, I would actually map out different pathways in my career, times when you can move, times when you need to sit still, maybe during pregnancy and post-pregnancy. I would be intentional about the steps. You can absolutely be in your mid-20s and finishing up school and deciding SMC is the path for me. And I say, give yourself the couple of years to situate your life for that because you do have time. I personally became an SMC. I started thinking when I was in my early 30s, and then I did not start trying until I was about 37. So between, I'd say probably 32 and 37, I did a lot of thinking, a lot of maneuvering, a lot of saving. I think at one point I was working three jobs. I had two adjunct professor jobs, and I was a full-time traveling instructor for a software company. But I just kept stacking that money for a rainy day. So not only was I a rules girl, I was also a rainy day fund girl. So that's my response. I don't think that there's a right age. I think that there is a right mindset and a right framing for becoming an SMC. The moment you get your fertility testing results back, that's pretty much when I'd say probably 65% of the women will come back and say, okay, I'm doing this now, because now they have information and they're informed.
Do you think the fertility industry, like insurance, clinics, physicians, are discriminatory towards single moms by choice?
Yes, I definitely think so. Because if you look at your policies, the policies are geared toward if you as a couple, so this is specific to the insurance. If you as a couple have been trying for 6 months after a certain age and you're not getting pregnant, then you are now bequeathed this bucket of benefits, right? Mm-hmm. And then as an SMC, you could have been trying with a romantic partner and it didn't work out, but that doesn't count. And so then what are you doing? You're sitting there looking at this bucket of funds that you can't touch. And in particular, as a woman, you could have legitimate internal issues with regards to conceiving. And so I do believe that it should not be like if you as a couple, right? And you'll find that language actually in some of the insurance policies and employee manuals. So that's a bit frustrating. I will say with regards to clinics and physicians, I think they're trained and their bedside manner is what it is. And it should be like an equal level of treatment. But I could tell you that in this day and age, they have to broaden what that bedside manner should entail and should be conducive to different family structures, right? So if I come in as an SMC and I don't have a partner and I have to attend each of my doctor's visits in a good situation where you're getting good, happy news, that's great. But I think that you should make sure that you're covering the whole patient if they come in and prepare them for bad news, and not just prepare them for bad news, but prepare them to sit with an advocate with that news as well and make sure that you follow up. Because I did have a really devastating miscarriage where my fertility clinic really dropped the ball on following up and following through. And they knew I was an SMC. And so I left that appointment at that time and I followed up with the different things that I had to do physically for myself. But at some point, the nursing staff, the doctors stopped following up with me. So there was a lull where I had retained placenta and did not know that this was happening. And at some point, they stopped contacting me. And so that was a problem. It could have been a catastrophic problem, but I do think that in this age of different family structures, different ways that people are coming to conception and the amount of money that we're spending, I believe SMCs do require the best and the same. And so they have to be prepared to fill in some of that gap that you might be without a partner. So you might need a bit of extra handholding. I think that's fair and equitable. The person who helped me the most navigate the system through that devastating miscarriage was another reproductive endocrinologist that I turned to get help because I needed a doctor with a different bedside manner. So I took all of my toys and I took my money and I took my finances and I went to another clinic who then did advocacy on my part to the other clinic. And so I say also, it is okay to share with other physicians the types of experiences that you're having, because they may be able to provide some additional insight and resources that you had not thought of before. Next question. How do you talk to your kids about being donor conceived? I got started in the national SMC space. And in that space, it is the norm to say, tell them early, tell them often about their conception story. And I go a step further in that I look for intentional ways to introduce different family structures, to introduce our conception stories for my girls, because they do have two slightly different conception stories. And I will say, tell them early, tell them often, because a lot of it is you getting used to what the story is, you becoming comfortable, you having navigated the space as an adult to know what types of questions the kids might get, having listening to what goes down on the playground, because it goes down on the playground.
Like playground politics.
It's a hot mess. But preparing your kids to walk in their truth, to embrace their story. And because the teachers, once your kids enter the school system, it all breaks open. It will come at them from different directions. Teachers will ask them and challenge them about their family structure. And then they will have to go into their conception story. Other children will challenge them. They themselves will see other parents and family structures at pickup and drop off. So your kids are going to have these questions. I know some in the SNC space will say, oh, I want to find all the books that don't have a father in it. Or can you show me a cartoon that doesn't have a father in it? And I'm like, let's mix it up. I want my kids to see all kinds of family structures. And that includes families with a mom and a dad, mom and a mom, or grandma is my mom, or something like that. And so that's important. So I don't necessarily shy away from those books either, or those TV shows, because they also add to my arsenal of how I'm going to equip my kid to tell the story, and allows me to practice different ways. Because before they can read any story you read, you can make those words be whatever you need them to be. At some point, they will be like, Mommy, that's not what it says. But up until that point, you can practice with talking about the different words, the names, the family structures. And so I do that all along the way. So we have had the conversation about you have a donor, right? And so we are also entering into the space where I have to tell my daughter that she has an egg donor, my youngest. So how do I work that into our story? What does it take to be a family and things like that? So I'm still in the learning process of how I'm going to tell my youngest daughter about being donor egg in a way that my oldest daughter is not going to blab. Right. And so I have to balance that telling of that truth. For now, we're a team of three and we're powerful and we love it. But at some point, I'm going to have to tease out the slight differences in their story. And I'm preparing. So in that case, I have not yet started verbalizing that. I'm still focusing on the donor conception, because I do want to sit down and talk with my youngest specifically about the special bond that we have. So I think tell them early, tell them often. Don't necessarily shy away from books that have a father in the story, because hopefully you're modeling in your village all different types of family structures. And that's the way the world is.
What are some things you considered when preparing to add an additional child to your family?
Well, I will say, we can decide and God will laugh. Right?
Yeah.
My intent was to have my children be 2 years apart. I thought that would be the ideal spacing. I had scoped out childcare because finances was a deciding factor for me. Could I afford two in childcare? And I stalked my daycare center for the entire duration of trying for my second child to make sure that I could afford two in daycare, because I would have had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And that plan, my journey to my second daughter was 3 years almost. And so, but here's what I did. I knew that my daycare center had one rate for a child based on their age, but they also had a sibling discount, and they had a discount if you paid for the full month. I factored that into the financial plan. And so that told me at the very least I could afford two in daycare. And then I proceeded to try for my second when my eldest was 1 year old, and it ended up shrinking out to 3 years. I had them, and there's a 5-year age gap between my girls. And so whatever age gap you get is going to be ideal, is what I hear. And mine ends up being pretty ideal, because now I have a 2-year-old and a soon to be 2-year-old and a soon to be 7-year-old. And in terms of that spacing, I don't have to deal with potty training for the eldest. There's not a whole lot of overlap in where they are developmentally. And so I can really focus on the needs of the little one at a point where the older one wants to be independent. And so for me, my 5-year age spacing feels right, but I didn't just arrive at 5 years. It was something that I went through.
the process. How about you, Hera?
Yes. So if you really enjoy our content, the best way that you can show your appreciation is to leave us a comment wherever you listen to your podcast.
Well, Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends. And I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasmc@gmail.com. And if you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.